guys.
Hey guys, welcome to the newest episode of
Thrifting Minds.
I'm excited to be here. We're separate, but we're
together.
We feel like we're together.
It's been a lot going on.
You can see your beautiful face. Yeah, it's been a busy time. It's been a pretty crazy time, I'm sure, for everybody.
Yes.
We're actually not even together for this episode. As we just stated, we're doing our very first virtual recording of the podcast.
Yes, I'm super excited to be hitting you guys up in so long and for us to not be together, but we're FaceTiming, which is really cool. I think I encourage everybody to make sure that they FaceTime their friends, FaceTime their family members, and just still try to stay connected.
Absolutely. You know, before this whole thing, I loathed FaceTime. Like, unless I was traveling, anytime someone was like, you want to FaceTime? I was like, oh, dread. But now I feel like I'm finally getting the hang of it. So this is really expanding my skills.
I feel that. I actually love to FaceTime more than I like to text. So this is right up my alley.
I know this. You've also been helping me get better at FaceTime because really for years it was like, oh, dread. No. But now it's like, I miss everyone's beautiful faces. Yeah, it's a very exciting time. Yeah, we know that there's a lot of tough things going on right now. We know a lot of people are in really rough situations, and we kind of have to take it every day one day at a time every day. So, Dom, update us on how you're doing with all of this craziness.
I'm doing, honestly, Mary, like, I'm taking it day by day. Sometimes I am waking up with so much energy and I need to go outside. I need to go. Just try to be social without being social is kind of hard. But other than that, I've just been taking it day by day, doing different little practices to help me cope. And also I'm working from home, so majority of my time is kind of focused to my job. But outside of that, I'm just really trying to make sure that my mental and physical state match, because usually one is more stronger than the other. Usually the physical, when you're out and about, you're just, you know, always moving. And now that you're just like stuck to be in one space, it's hard for your mental to really understand and cope with all the things you want to do physically, but you can't. So I'm excited that I'm able to just focus on things mentally that I needed to work on when I couldn't because I worked all the time.
Yeah, I like that. I like the point. I want to go back to what you were saying. You said you're doing little kind of anecdotes every day. What are some of the best new habits that you're building right now that you would suggest or recommend to people right now that you feel like has helped you the most?
Yeah, Mary, something that's really helped me the most is plants. Nourishing something and watching it grow and taking your time to plant it and water it every day and give it sunlight and give it love and talk to your plants. It's kind of like very therapeutic, very satisfying. And each day they grow. Each day there's something different that you didn't realize about your plants. And then it's like, before you know it, you have a cute little jungle in your place.
Yeah, that's so beautiful. And also like that generates, I think it grounds you in some sense of control in a time when there's so little control. And it also gives you something that's kind of going back to your roots. It's something that is very inherent, you know, like taking care of plants is something that we've been doing for a really long time. So I bet it's, you know, I kill plants, but I bet it's really therapeutic. Like, I love what you're saying about it's new every day. It's growing, it's changing in a good way when there's so much bad change happening.
Yeah, I agree, Mary. And some things that I've also done is definitely yoga. Yoga has definitely helped out and enhanced my mental and physical. But enough about me, Mary. How have you been through this pandemic?
You know, I'll be honest with you. I've done yoga twice.
Hey, so, it's,
you know, like
day by day.
Yeah, it's with the dream of doing it a little more, because I mean, I really can tell a difference on those two total days that I did do a yoga exercise in the morning, that it did make a huge difference. And then I proceeded to not make it a routine. So if anyone's struggling with routine right now, you're not alone in that. But, you know, same as you're saying, like day by day, and I feel really grateful for the position that I'm in. You know, I have an apartment, I have food, I have a lot of, you know, I have what I need. And the thing that I think has been helping me the most, like you were saying, yours is plants. Mine has been reading, you know, catching up on books that I really want to read has been really such a beautiful way to pass the time for me. And it's a really way to, I mean, none of these books say anything about COVID-19, because none of them, you know, exactly. know about it. So it's a really good way to take a break from everything and do something for myself. And then it's also extremely, you know, something I've always loved about reading is you connect so deeply with the writer, and the writer, if they're doing their job right, they're being very vulnerable. And so in a time when you're at a loss for a lot of connection, especially because, you know, you and I are both very outgoing people, that I think reading has been really helpful for me during this time. And it's something I've also just missed in the crazy schedule that I've been keeping up while being in school and working full time. I haven't gotten to read for myself. So that's been kind of my way to stay sane. But outside of that, you know, the days kind of run together and kind of take it day by day. And there's some days, like you're saying, Dom, where I wake up and I feel great. And there's some days where that's just not it at all. And, you know, I think also the weather affects that as well. So shout out to all the people that are in Seattle, that are in the northern regions, that are dealing with cloudy days day after day, because we've had like four cloudy days, and I can definitely tell a major difference in just how I feel when I wake up on a sunny day versus a rainy day. And I love rainy days, but you know, it's tougher when like your one option is to go outside, and then you're like, I guess I'll like wait for the rain to lighten up, and then I can go for a quick walk.
Yeah.
So, you know, but it's been good. It's been good. I feel really lucky to be in the place that I'm at, but it's hard. It's definitely been challenging in its own ways, for sure.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's good to point out that, you know, everybody's going through a little bit of something, and everybody is also trying to take it day by day. So, in other news, we want to say that we miss everybody. We are now more focused than ever because we have the time. We have the time.
Yeah, we're always saying we're so busy, we don't have the time. Now we do have the time, and that is a huge plus. I'm really glad to have this to look forward to and to plan with you each episode. And it's, you know, it's a really... That's been such a great thing to have during this time. So with that in mind, what are we talking about this episode, Dawn?
We're talking about live or die. Die is in...
D-Y-E.
Die is in color. Yes.
Yeah. How did your researching go for this episode? Are you excited to share all that you've learned?
I'm a little overwhelmed with my research, to be honest with you, just because, I mean, you can get into this rabbit hole of different things that you originally wanted to go in and talk about, but end up in something else about die. So I try to keep it to some... two types, and then some fun facts. So I try to keep it very minimal on my end, just because I'm more on like the organic natural dyes. I was more intrigued by that, so I kind of focused in that rim. Therefore, it brought me through all these rabbit holes of like how it became natural or what made it deadly. Mm-hmm.
Synthetic. Yeah. It's, yeah, there's a lot of different, as you said, there's a lot of different ways that it can take you when you're deep diving into it. And that's kind of been my experience too. So I feel like some of my notes are all over the place because I'm like, oh man, that's really fascinating. But also like not really particularly important to the environment, but I'm still very madly like fascinated by that. But now let's like move over here to this problem. And so it's like a little all over the place, but it's also much more fascinating than I think it's given credit for. And I think, you know, just upon like just a little bit of research, I think it really does need to be a much bigger conversation of the fashion industry. Like we're speaking, you know, we're spending all this time on textiles, but like dyes are one of the biggest pollutants of water that we have. Like they're causing immensely damaging issues that are long lasting. Yeah,
and that's not even on the rim of natural dyes. Natural dyes are even more intensive. Like, I mean, from wool, yarn, leather, wood, silk, cotton, polyester, paper, fat. It's like every single thing has a dye. Food, everything has a dye.
Right. And not only that, like we're always pushing the edge of what dyes can do because we're always looking for a more vibrant color, more long lasting, more eye catching. Like we're always trying to really push the boundaries of color. And what are the repercussions of that? And what are the ways that we've done that through history? And, you know, we wanted to break up this episode into a couple different themes. So we have kind of the history of dye. And then we have the pros and cons of dye. And then we have, I'm missing one of them. What's the third one?
I think it's just the closing of dye, just like basically giving us your fun fabrics with dye in it. So like, for instance, I have like a lot of natural dyes that I would love with denim and wool and all these other fabrics that I want to talk about. So ending in a positive note, even though dye has a lot of history that we need to, I mean, like you said earlier, we might need to do a part two.
Yeah. Well, it's also because, I mean, dye has been something that has been evolving for thousands of years. And the earliest, I think, record of dye that we have dates back to 3500 BC. Like that's a long time ago, and that's just like what we have on record of it. And you know, and that of course was when it was, you know, was from vegetables, fruits, flowers, insects and fish. So you know, I think it was really probably experimental just to see, like, I mean, you're just running around like cracking things open, seeing what bleeds out. Like, is it a vibrant color? All right, let's cultivate that. I think that's probably how it went down.
I feel like that is very caveman vibes, honestly, because I mean, what is color if it's not dye? You know what I mean? Like what was the shade? Well, you know what I mean? Of course, is everything white? It's everything, because everything couldn't have been white or a certain type of color. So yeah, you had to play around with the dyes.
Yeah. Well, I think something that I stumbled upon that was really fascinating to me was that dye has hugely informed our perception of color and what is deemed a color that needs its own name and what is, you know, because we have like for instance pink. Like why does pink have its own term when it's really just like a very light red? But we don't have a, you know, and you can get really specific and say there's way to, you know, all these different colors for things. But in our regular day-to-day terminology, we have like, oh, that shirt is like a light yellow or a pale yellow or something like that. But pink, like all these things are informed by the dye history of the world, of like how we, what we think like color is and what we associate it to. And a really prime example of that, of course, is like pink being for girls and blue being for boys. And that didn't start until, you know, marketing took over and they wanted to sell more of those clothes for children's clothes. Before that, actually, blue was associated with women because this is something that I found out. So blue was not actually a very popular color. It was commonly thought of for commoners. And it wasn't until artists started painting the Virgin Mary in blue that blue started to be associated with women, and women started to wear blue more because it was associated with purity. It was associated with the Mother of God. And so that's when it really started to gain popularity. And pink was more associated with men. So, you know, like there's these things tied up in color that are about our social constructs that are completely arbitrary, but that we tie into meaning of like how we interpret the world around us. And I think that that's really fascinating. So like that's not necessarily environmental, but it is very informative of how we think about color and how that's informed through dyes. And that's like, I mean, that's a lot to unpack there, but that's really crazy. A lot of that I found out from this book called The Secret Lives of Color that I ordered. It's by Cassia St. Clair. And she just breaks down the history of like every color. And that's what the book is. I'm very excited.
Wow, that sounds really interesting. I like how the color changes were different back in the day. I did not know that blue was associated with women. I mean, because blue is such a boy color now, and like I love that history on that. It is funny that you said too about how all these natural dyes came from just random things people picked up. I was doing my research on the history of organicdyes.com, which you can also follow them on all their social medias. They're constantly doing dye workshops, which is really cool. So most of the dyes that you were mentioning are pretty much split up in different categories. So for instance, different colors that came from plants, they were known to be in areas all over pretty much. Like, so red usually identify with insects. I don't know if you were researching anything about that.
Yeah.
And a lot of the yellow back in the day was cow urine. Yeah.
Whoa, it actually made
a really cool color, like an Indian yellow, which is like a, almost not even like a pastel. It's really dark. And a lot of the colors that they used were just like you said, really sporadic things. And for instance, like purple at one point came from snails, just like snail fabric,
right,
and like
Tyrian purple. I
also
saw that.
For different colors of brown and orange, they use octopus for that, which is kind of really interesting.
Yeah.
To see the different colors come from these just animal dyes, just natural animal dyes. Also too, when you were talking about plants, oh my gosh, so many plants produce so many beautiful colors. It's insane.
Yeah,
Mary,
so vibrant.
Some examples that I want to give out, and this is all back from the history of organicdyes.com. So chestnut is actually the tree produces flowers, which are which makes certain colors when you put them on linen, wool. So the colors are usually like a brown, peachy brown color, which I thought that was really cool.
Ooh,
because
I
don't see a lot of flamboyant colors in wool, because I feel like wool is such a hard color to dye. I don't know. I would think in my head it would be a hard color to dye.
It absorbs so much, is what I'd imagine. Like, it would take a lot of dye to make it a vibrant thing.
Yeah,
article. Yeah, it's so, it's really fascinating. Like, going back to the purple that you said is made out of snail shells and shellfish, is Tyrian purple. And it said that Tyrian purple, which originated what we know now as Lebanon, was literally worth more than its weight in gold. So they would like boil down putrefied snail shells, and it would take like 1,200 of them to make even like 4 grams of dye. Like, it took such an absurd amount to make this like really rich purple color that it was only associated with royalty, because they were the only people that could afford to have something made with that purple.
Wow.
And so again, that's like going back into like how, like, you know, we think of like Burberry is like, oh, that person's really rich, or like a Prada bag, like how these are staples of class. Like, color was a staple of class.
Yeah.
back in the day.
Yeah, I mean, I truly believe that. I mean, I think about the process. Like, I was talking about some of these dyes were just kind of made sporadically, but as time moved on, I mean, even from 5 years to a decade, the process of how the dye evolved is crazy. I mean, for the instance of, I've got some information from the evolution of textiledyes.com.
Yes.
Ooh. Yes. It speaks about the requirements of certain materials. So think about it too. Did people really know the materials they were using back then? You know, did they know really what kind of, I mean, maybe cotton, right? Maybe, but like what type of real materials were they using back in the day? In this article, it suggests that most people used cotton or wool due to just that, like, the lifestyle that was there, you know, like sheep, goat, and all that. A lot was used in resources where people were able to bathe and drink, which also had a lot to do with how the color came out. So they come up with this solution called simmer. So it's a, you know, simmer is like where you simmer food and you boil and you let it marinate.
That's a sexy word.
Simmer.
Yeah.
Simmering.
Yeah.
So like, back in the day, they would simmer wool. Wool takes about, back in the day, it said it took about 48 hours said 48 hours, and they said it into like different terms, but it said 48 hours, it's pretty much 2 to 4 days for it to just appear, the color, on the fabric.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Talk about slow fashion. Okay,
talk about slow fashion. Talk about labor, no? I mean, you're right. It had everything to do with money back in the day. Having a certain type of color had everything to do with money. I mean, because everything cost money to make, especially when it was being experimented on. Ooh.
And, you know, too, Dom, a point that you just brought up was, you know, not knowing exactly like what the materials that they were working with. And in a lot of ways, you know, we're going to talk later in this episode about how that is still true for this day and age. But one thing that also, like I found in some research I was doing, is the history of green. And it's crazy because actually the history of the color green is that it's inherently a very tough color to create. And actually it was a trade among painters back in the day that they would just know how to like layer different colors to make green, because green also it often faded, degraded, and even burned holes through canvas.
Wow.
So you were known as like an amazing painter if you were able to like use green. So like next time if you're in a museum and you see green used in some older paintings, you're like, okay, that person was like a master of their craft, because they knew exactly how to meticulously mix these colors. Like I recently saw a movie called The Portrait of a Lady on Fire, and it's a beautiful film. I highly recommend it. The use of color is really powerful. And it's about this woman who's hired to paint this other woman and this portrait to send off to this man that she's going to marry so that they know what she looks like. And she, in the portrait, she's like in this beautiful emerald green dress, and you see them like mixing the two colors, like yellow and blue together to make the green. But when I first saw this movie, I was like, oh yeah, whatever. They just are like making, they were just painting. But it's probably because they like couldn't use green at this time because it was actually toxic. So green, like wallpaper and paints, contained arsenic and also dye. So green dye would also have toxic fumes. And they actually think that it led to many deaths, including possibly Napoleon Bonaparte. Yeah.
What?
In 1821. Like he had like his whole Crazy. Room painted green. Right? Like, because think about it. When was the last time you were in like a vividly green room? Like I don't think I've ever been in a vividly green
never.
Room. Like maybe pale
no,
green.
Never.
Yeah. Like it's not used very often. And so it was actually incredibly toxic. And so it's just, it's interesting because I think there's a lot of ways that still plays out in like our view of green. Because you don't really think about using green that much in interior design. You don't see it very often. It's not as prominent a color as a lot of other things. And it's because like it was killing people, you know? So it's actually not because people don't like green, but because it actually was deadly, which was just like bonkers to me. I was like, I had no idea.
Wow, that's all. That's insane to know all of that in one color, right?
Yeah, right. And then that's so crazy because it's like it's derived from nature, but that also kind of informs a lot of things about what we're talking now, because it is, you know, we really do have to push the boundaries of our conversation around what's environmentally friendly. And but just because it's made from the environment doesn't always mean that it's still healthy for humans. So we still do have to make sure that whatever we're working with is still healthy for us. You know, it can't just be anything.
Yeah. That's a very good point. And really knowing the colors and dyes that make that is healthy, and that is also healthy for you and the environment. So I do have a organic dye that I want to talk about. It's called It's called logwood. It's based from logwood trees, and they produce certain colors: violet, purple, gray, and black colors, which is really, really interesting. Ooh, I like all because of the high value of logwood, English cutters and Spanish-controlled Central Americans, they bravely took on this logwood tree epidemic, in the sense of they bought acres and acres and acres, not only in Central America, but in Mexico and other Spanish countries. And taking on this fabric, or this dye in particular, has required very small amount of production, which is the reason why it's such a famous, well-known dye. This logwood dye is sensitive to pH, which our skin is sensitive to pH. That's why we can't wear certain fabrics. Ooh. And will change certain colors due to how you wash it, which also started the change of certain detergents that were color friendly. So logwood not only changed the game with the production aspect, but it also changed the game for how retailers sold for certain fabrics as far as cleaning and how to protect those colors.
Oh, that's really fascinating.
Some things that logwood dyes are famous in are denim. The most famous fabric that it's comparable to, or that it's always in, really, is denim. So, of course, America has logwood throughout every denim company, every denim jacket, every denim in America is, or have some sort of logwood organic dye attached to it.
Oh, I love to hear that, because that's actually like positive.
Yeah,
news.
And it's super affordable. So it didn't have to take away from the environment to make it, which is why denim is such a big thing in the U.S. because it was such a affordable dye and was such a good fashion trend at the same time.
Right, you know, because jeans and denim was born out of necessity.
Exactly.
For workers.
And even for war, because of like just protecting different types of people that are not on the front end, but people that were just working in the back end too, wore a lot of denim. And just, it was just a sign of like respect, because a lot of people saw the trees being made and like the process of how it is. A lot of people worked in denim factories back then as well. So denim was a lot, it was more something that you made and you cherish because it lasts so long.
I like, you know, you're bringing up a lot of good points about just like the necessity and the accessibility of different dyes and, you know, and their effect on our society. You know, like denim is such a necessity, so we need it to be, you know, we need to use dyes that are really accessible and cheap to use. And I think, you know, in the case that you're talking about, obviously with what is it called?
Logwood.
Okay, so yeah, you know, like with logwood, we lucked out because that's helpful for the environment. But so much of the conversation with dye is that it continuously goes back to accessibility and and making it easy. And a lot of the time that doesn't actually play out as well as logwood, because it's usually synthetic and it's usually compromising not only the quality of the garment, but also the workers and their livelihood. And in art, and it's not even with the workers, like, it's so much bigger than that. It goes beyond into the communities where these factories are. It goes on into the water sources that people drink out of. And, you know, so I think that that's a lot of kind of the next part of our conversation, is a lot of the scary parts that go into dye manufacturing. And a lot of that started in the late 1700s in France. They actually recommended starting to use chlorine water for commercial bleaching. And they added hydrogen peroxide and sodium peroxide. And so all of these different things started to be deemed acceptable to start using in our dye in France. Centuries ago, like, that's a while ago, like 1700s. It's been a minute since then. And that was kind of like when that was born out. Is that kind of what you, is that what you saw when in your research about when they, we kind of started to shift, like in the Industrial Revolution, we kind of really, that's when the major shift to chemical dyes and using harmful elements in our clothing started. Is that kind of what you're seeing too?
Yeah,
on your side?
Mostly in certain uncertain dyes. Like indigo is a very particular dye that affected a lot of countries in different ways. For instance, you know, the actual indigo color comes from, of course, like all over. It's Latin. It's Pakistani. People have all different types of versions of indigo, but how it impacted the world and people's countries is how they dyed it, and using those natural streams and waters to create dye, and also affecting everything else within that. So a lot of factories, they just use their resources in the suckiest way ever, by dying in springs and dying in lakes and dying in, back in the day, they did not care about others, and they just cared about, you know, getting the color out to the people, and not giving a, don't care about the people that are making it, the animals that are getting affected in the dye process. I mean, it's off record that they don't even know the amount of how many animals and things have died in the process of dying things in natural springs and lakes and pretty much, I'm not gonna say, I feel like they could have probably done it in you know, ocean water as well, but like they cultivated cultivated all of these natural resources instead of building a better resource for the dye. They used the world, Mother Nature, and it's shown to push everything back. I mean, from the growth of like what's growing out of the ground, you know, just all of these little things that affected the world from them just using the water of natural resources to dye clothing. It's like it affected so much, and they didn't even realize that, and they still don't even realize that until people like us and other companies and organizations that are pushing to do a cleaner route, a better way to dye versus using our resources, using everyone's resources and not really caring about the consequences.
Yeah, well, I think, I mean, you brought up so many points, and I mean, it goes without saying that there's a lot to unpack when we talk about the repercussions of harmful dye. And at the end of the day, it's one of the it's one of the major polluters of our clean water. And according to Cambridge, approximately 50,000 tons of dye are discharged into global water systems from textile industries.
So that is the ocean?
Really, every... Right, exactly. Like, and so like ocean? everything is affected by it. Your land is affected by that. The people who work in that area are affected by it. And it affects every single part of the process. there are repercussions. So I read this article by the Washington Post that said that it genetically modified seeds that strain farmers' budgets. So they use pesticides in cotton fields, and they have harsh chemicals used in dyes, and the toxic waste that pollutes rivers and the chemical treated clothing ends up in landfills. So it's not only just sticking to water, but water soaks up into our earth. Like it affects us at every single level. So this is not just like, you know, when we talk about, you know, we talk about polyester that's really messing, you know, that's really affecting our air pollution. We're talking about cotton that's really affecting our water, but dyes are affecting everything, and it's long lasting. There was a study done, by a gentleman who goes to, Punjab University in India. And he says that the use of synthetic dyes has an adverse effect on all forms of life, and that they found 72 toxic chemicals that have been identified in waters solely from textile dyeing, and 30 of those cannot be removed. So 30 of those 72 toxic chemicals cannot be removed from that water. And that's when PFAS chemicals come in, which are now being termed forever chemicals. And there's that, you're going to see that word pop up a lot when you start deep diving into harmful dyes. Yes,
I saw that a lot, read that a lot. It's so funny because I guess I steered from all of like the harsh stuff. I grabbed a little bit from it, but I love that you dug right into it, Mary. I feel like I got it's like a really emotional, just hearing more about the factories, I think I got stuck on that, and I had to like go somewhere else and like maneuver my thoughts into some positive of things about dye. But I love that you're bringing this up. So continue.
Well, I love that you're bringing in the positive, because I don't have as much on that. So you sprinkle that in like stardust into this episode, because we need it. But it's, I mean, I think that we really have to think more critically about it, and it can even be the root cause of a lot of problems, like the cancer that people have in certain areas is directly associated to a lot of where these factories are. So that's something that we just cannot ignore. Like, this episode is called Live or Die, and a lot of people long before either of us, you know, were even born have been trying to fight against these companies like DuPont and these other huge chemical companies that just keep on pumping these poisons into our water that is in nearly 90% of Americans now. Like, it's in, I mean, it's in everyone. I mean, it's everywhere. And that's a terrifying thing. Yeah. But also, you know, there's a lot of people that it takes very hard research. It takes very hard evidence to really work the way its way through this. And I think some examples of that that I've been drawn towards, because I've actually been kind of trying to watch more movies and read more literature that's based on fighting this issue. And I think some of my favorite examples of that have been, last year, the movie Dark Waters came out. And that is about the lawyer who's tried to bring down DuPont. And he brought thousands of plaintiffs who sued DuPont, chemical company, for polluting the water with these forever chemicals. Another thing that I would also recommend to anyone who's interested in learning more about this is a book called Tom's River by Dan Fagen. And his story, Tom's River is in New Jersey. And so basically, in sum, this large chemical companies have been using Tom's River as their private dumping grounds, and they just would put their leaky drums and open pits and discharging billions of gallons of acid-laced wash water into the town's river. And from the years of 1979 to 1995, there was a total of 24 cases of cancer that were diagnosed in this area.
Wow.
Which, that's a fair amount of people, but I'm sure it's probably a lot more than that. Right. So, you know, I think we're putting that also, you know, we talk about this a lot, but we're putting that on our bodies. You know, we're putting these things that are dyed and these types of chemicals, that it's doing that to our water. Then what is it doing to us when we're breathing it in and we're washing it and we're living and breathing in it. And we have to think more critically, I think, about the long-term effects of that, because, you know, you brought up so many beautiful points about all these different radiant dyes that are natural, that are better for the environment, better for us, and they might be more expensive.
Actually,
it might be a more expensive route.
They're not, Mary. And the thing is about it is that people are not understanding that dye is not supposed to be mass produced. That's the problem with people. Dye was a singular personal experiment that just went to the masses. And even in the States, when you look up how to dye, do it yourself. They have avocado pills, orange pills, I mean berries, yeah. I mean turmeric, for goodness sake. You know, turmeric, which is everything from your body, turmeric is healthy for, and including to put on your skin. So those people don't think about those people. When I'm saying those people, I mean the people in those companies that are dumping toxic waste pretty much into places that they shouldn't. They don't think about the causes and the consequences of that. It's longevity. It's like long term, no matter what, no matter how many times they say that they are trying to improve their dye, it doesn't matter. You know, it's like you're not improving it if it's not organic. I'm sorry.
You bring up so many points, and I think a lot of what you're getting at is also really inspiring, because we're always trying to think of, like, you and I are always talking about what's pushing fashion, what's going to be the future of fashion, what is slow fashion going to keep looking like as it evolves. And the dye process that you're talking about, Dom, dares us to really rethink of a unique cultivated style for each person that allows us to each kind of have our own colors, to have our own aesthetics. Like, you're responsible for curating those colors yourself, and not one to, you know, like, it's going to be hard to cultivate the exact same hue for each person. And I think that is kind of a really cool world. Like, I would love to, like, that would be such a beautiful place to live in, to see everyone taking back, you know, a hand and the creation of their clothing through kind of what you're implying, which is a much more creative and exciting way of dyeing clothing. And, you know, I think that we're very limited, you know, in the way that we produce clothing now. There's really so much of, like, I want it to look exactly the same, and I want it to look like the exact same as this person's, and I want it to be, like, solid through and through. I want it to be the same exact color. Like, you want to see a rack of clothing and be like, that's the same red hue in all 15 of these shirts. But why? That's just because we've normalized that. I mean,
honestly, Pinterest is perfect for wanting to try it yourself, do it yourself. I mean, I'm so inspired by even doing my own research on all of these different, I mean, literally pomegranate, the color that it brings out. I mean, onion skins. I don't know if you guys understand that the onion skins, like the purple onion skins, give off this like rich yellow. Like, I was watching this girl on YouTube after I was researching all of these, the walnut shells. I mean, like, literally all these different like things that you could pick up and you eat every single day. You could go thrift some beautiful linen, go thrift some beautiful cotton, go thrift some beautiful wool, and just experiment. It's fun. It's interesting. And you have time now.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you can go to the produce store. They're still essential. And I mean, I'm trying to dig around, trying to find new hobbies and become an expert in everything before things go back to normal. I haven't mastered a thing yet, but maybe it's dying. You know, maybe I should practice.
I mean,
some
honestly,
dye.
What's in your refrigerator right now? Try it out. Cut the peel off, throw it on some old fabric. Yeah. You never know. Like, play around. It's a fun thing to do with your kids. It's a fun thing to do with your partner. It's just fun. I mean, people throw away food all the time and not really truly experiment everything. You know, everything.
Yeah, use the whole process of it. And also too, like, you know, because I think something that we should also discuss is, you know, a lot of the natural way of dyeing things that we're talking about at the top of the episode had to do with like really harmful ways of hurting animals, like really
very
brutal things. But there's so many there's so many natural dyes that Mother Nature yields to us that don't have to deal with harming animals. And you can experiment with that right at your own in your home.
And
like, yeah, you're saying.
And I get it. This is a very like instant world. Like, I get it. Sometimes you don't want to sit there and dye your whole outfit. I get it. However, you experimenting will give you a little bit more compassion for when you, you know, hear about these factories, you hear about these people working hard to dye things that they don't even want to dye, and they're dying. Why they're dying, literally dyeing your clothes, and they're dying from these chemicals that are in these clothes. So think about all of these things. Do you want to live or do you want to die?
Yeah. Ooh. Yeah. I mean, that's it. I think, you know, the next question that we kind of got to ask is, on a bigger scale, how do we make things better? And I found this site called biofriendlyplanet.com. And some of the things it suggests is, first, the fashion professionals and brands should make it their business to be aware of the dyeing process of the textiles they purchase. I mean, you should also just be aware of the working, the conditions of the workers that you're buying your textiles from. I mean, Bangladesh is going through hell right now, just trying to get paid for all of these fabrics that have been canceled during
COVID-19. And it's based for people in the US. So let's think about that. We're over here buying fast fashion, but we can't pay for it. That's not okay.
No way. And also too, I don't know names, but I know apparently another sketchy thing that's happening is there's some companies that say they're gonna pay them and then they haven't done it yet, you know. So it's not just about looking good, people. It's about paying people
and being
what they're
honest.
Owed. It's about
doing
the
right
thing.
Be honest. Yes, I think people don't see that.
So no. And then so, but on top of that, not only is it up to the fashion professionals and the brands behind all of this, it's also that the government should be at the forefront of creating and enforcing policies that promote safe use and disposal of dyes. That's directly from Biofriendly Planet. I mean, people are dying, and the government's not getting behind controlling these chemicals and trying to fix this because it's about money. It's about money. And then beyond that, the U.S. is notorious for having harmful chemicals in our food.
Yes.
The FDA has like, you look at other countries like in the U.K. that have much more stricter guidelines for these things.
Yeah, they
stricter.
Do, because it's a problem. So, if they don't, it's a problem. And you can see how the world is healing. I mean, literally, it's healing itself. So imagine if we do place these laws, what the world could be.
And so, you know, go out and vote. And then also, you know, consumers should demand to know what's in the clothes they're wearing.
That goes
Care
back
about what
you
to
put fabric
on your back.
Packs. Why don't we know what's the fabric in our clothes? Like, they don't even care to put that on anything anymore. They just want to put extra small or whatever. It's like, okay, cool, but what is this? What type of polyester? Because there's freaking thousands of different polyesters. I bet people don't know that. It's over 1,000 synthetic polyesters, guys. Over 1,000.
I didn't even know that.
Yeah, it's insane. It's insane how many different polyesters people can make and it not be right. And it's still not recycled.
Right. Yeah, it's crazy, you know, and we gotta, you know, I really do champion the people that are putting out that information out there. Like, there's a documentary that I need to watch called The Devil We Know. And that's also kind of tying back to these harmful chemical companies that are causing all this pollution. And these, you know, these documentarians that are trying to get the truth out there, because it is, you know, it's a whole, we got to come at from all sides, Dom. We know that's all sides. It's got to be from art. It's got to be from the government. It's got to be from inside the industry. It's got to be from outside the industry. It's got to come from all sides, because that's how crucial this is.
Well, not only that, though, but when someone is speaking up about this, we need to have people to back them up. This is the thing. We have people that are already doing this and already talking about it, but they're getting shut down because they don't have people or voices to keep building them up. And that's the issue, because these bigger companies are bigger and badder. They walk around like they're the big bad
wolf. And they have more money.
And they are.
Yeah.
And they want to bring down something that's been stuck in the mud and stuck in law forever. It's like, we're sick and tired of this. So whoever, and you know someone that's speaking up about dye, they're speaking up about these chemicals being pushed, be on their side. Listen to what they're saying, because you don't even know what's really going on, because the government's not going to tell you. And the people that are selling you this stuff is not going to tell you what's really in it. So we should listen to people that actually been studying this, that's actually been understanding, like, okay, how are we as people going to get around this? Because a lot of other people, not just us, we just, because it's not in our front door and our front porch, does not mean it's happening, not going to happen to us, or it's not, doesn't mean it's not going to ever happen to us. It's going to affect us some way or the other, you know? So we should be support people that are supporting the world.
Oh, I think you said it all.
I mean, Mary, this episode was dear to my heart and I'm so excited to talk about it, but I do think that it has to be a to be continued, because we need to continue to talk about it.
I know, we scratched just the surface. I'm gonna be reading these books and watching these documentaries that I'm recommending,
honestly,
and, you know, seeing what else is out there, because it is another rabbit hole. I feel like the last two episodes I'm just like, here's,
oh my
this
god,
rabbit hole.
I know,
oh no, here's this, oh other no. rabbit
and
hole.
I think that's and I think that's down. What we decided to do this, because of the information that's put out there. And you know what, we're gonna put this on our followers, we're gonna put this on our listeners. You guys, give us some facts. Let us know what you guys feel about dye. Let us know what you feel about any of the topics that we've talked about today. If you know anyone that has any more information, I mean, anywhere in the world, we're wanting to know. We want to hear your story. We want to understand your story. We want to back you up, because we feel that this is important to not only just us, but it's beyond us. This literally is beyond us.
Yeah. Mm. Continue. Who knows what we'll talk about next?
Really,
time.
Who knows?
That took it out of me. That was a lot, but I feel, you know, excited to see where we're headed now that more coverage is being put out there and more truth is being spoken. Reality is spotlighting the issues within the systems, and you know, we're going to be part of trying
the
to
truth.
Make that. Excel forward.
We are the truth. Mary, look at us. This is our first, like, our first podcast not together, and it's interesting. It's so weird.
It is really weird. Do you have a drink, Dom?
Yes,
are you
I'm
drinking?
So disappointed. I didn't see a drink in your hand. I have a glass of Chardonnay.
You're so fancy. I have a sweet tea.
Hey, anything counts. Any of our listeners, we forgot to toast, but you guys know that we're not together. So it's a little different. Mm-hmm. This is a little different. If you feel like this episode is a little different, you know, just go with it, you know, because it's feeling different for us too.
Yeah. And on that note, our last episode, our previous episode, you know, we talked about a lot of really fun Instagrams that we follow and ways to stay inspired, and that we recorded that, as y'all heard, before we had to start social distancing, before things got to the point that they are now. But I highly recommend going and checking that out, and you know, see if you feel crafty afterwards, see if you feel like going and making something yourself, because you know, sometimes you just got to stay sane.
Yes. And also too, check out our mini-sodes. We have some awesome mini-sodes to keep you inspired through this time. Me and Mary are all about style and how that applies to the world and what is happening with the world next. So just stay tuned with us, y'all. Thank y'all for sticking with us through these times. We want to be here for y'all as well. Please go rate and comment and just talk to us. We are here to listen.
Oh my gosh, yeah. We know this is a tough time and everyone's in different, you know, they're in different headsets, like, you know, mindsets. There's some people that are, this is like their dream in the sense that they're, you know, they like, they are homebodies. They have more anxiety when it comes to social interactions, but they're in, you know, but there's also still ways that a lot of people are struggling. I mean, 6.6 million unemployed people.
Yeah, no. Yeah, that's not okay for the people. I just feel like this is also a good wake up call to see where we have to work on in our country. Really, in our country.
Oh, you could say that. I mean, again, yeah,
it's unfortunate to see all of the creatives affected by this the most. I think creatively I see the hurt in a lot of our musicians and artists and actresses and all the above, Broadway, local businesses, small businesses, everybody's being truly affected by this. So in these times, I just feel like the little things matter. A smile at someone, you know, an encouraging word, anything that you feel that you could, you know, just bless someone else, just try to do it. It's the season, it's the time to be your better self and be your kinder self in this time.
And you know, we're all about community, so this, you know, we're like, how do we bring the community together? But we got to rethink how to do that. And there's still so many ways to do that. I'm so thankful for FaceTime, for being able to still keep in contact with people and check in.
Yes.
And so see who you can check in with today. And if that's with me or Dom, you know that we're here for you. This is all about supporting and helping each other through this. So we hope everyone is staying safe. And if you can stay home, if that is a privilege that you have, please do. If you're an essential worker, please stay safe and know that we deeply appreciate everything that you're
doing. Thank you so much, guys. Have a safe night and stay home. Bye.
Yep. Bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Thrifting Minds. Our podcast is produced and edited by DJ Lucas. Our theme song is by Stefan Osei. And we cannot wait to bring you more inspo for thrifting and fashion on the next episode. Stay tuned.